So the big question today with this church sermon series is, okay, so what's next? We've spent the last several weeks, the better part of the summer, looking at a movement of people, looking at a group of people who did some amazing things. And we looked at a group of people who were not settled to be a part of an institution, because no one wants to be a part of an institution. We all want to be a part of a movement. And this group of people were a movement and began this movement, and they started with just 120 people. And they moved into the streets of Jerusalem and started sharing this message. And the message basically was, is that God has done something and everybody is invited to this. God has done something in our midst, and God has done something for us in our day, in our time. And it didn't happen 2,000 years ago. Now, it happened for you and I about 2,000 years ago. But for that initial group of people, it didn't happen a long time ago. It happened about 2 months ago. And you could go look, and you could go see, and you could understand the places where Jesus was, and you can go look at the tomb and realize that he's not there. You can go to some of these eyewitnesses and ask them questions about what happened. Because in our day, in our time, in our moment, God has done something for us. It's not that God wants something from us. God has done something for us, and it is Jesus Christ. And that was their basic, basic message. And they took this message and they shared it with all around them. And there was this characteristic that exemplified this early group of people. And they were, the distinguishing characteristic of the church was not a creed, but a behavior. There was something about them that set them apart. Had nothing to do with what they said they believed, had nothing to do with the books they wrote about what they believed, but it had to do with a behavior, a certain way of life. And that certain way of life is that they loved like Jesus love. They did those things that Jesus did, and they shared that with those around them. And the world was transformed, and lives were changed. But as all movements do, and as all things happen, it became an institution somewhere along the way. And you and I could go through church history and we could look at some moments where the church was really not that pretty, right? And it needed a little more makeup and it needed a better looking dress because it did not look that well. But along the way, things happen, and unfortunately, there's some tragic things that happen along the way. And the message got hijacked. And for many of us, we can go back and we can look at history and look at the Crusades and look at all those terrible things that went on. We could go back and look at the Spanish Inquisition and look at some areas where the church did not do a great job being a steward of this message. And so there are countless people among us, and there may be people who are going to watch this sermon, or there may be people who are going to listen online and they're going to say, Joe, yeah, but. And there are a lot of yeah, buts about what happened to the church along the way. There are all kinds of things through history. And I would say that the message, when there are terrible things that happen in history that we can blame on the church, what I would say is that message has been hijacked. That it gets hijacked along the way. And then there are other places where it gets a little complicated. That all of a sudden we begin to initiate some rules and some regulations and say, okay, wait a second. You can only be a part of us if you dress this way. You can only be a part of us if you only have like 3 tattoos. Or you can only be a part of us if you do a certain thing. Or you can only be a part of us if you sing this way or walk this way. There's a great Aerosmith reference. But there are some ways that we want you to be. And we begin to kind of make it complicated instead of loving the way Jesus loved and sharing that message with the rest of the world. But the good news is this, is there's always been a group of people that got it right. There's always been a group of people that say, okay, wait a second. All this complicated stuff, all this horrible history, that's not who we are. And we understand that, and we want to be counter to that. And if you look throughout history, again, if you're listening online, if you're watching the video, if you look through history, hospitals are around today because of Christians, because someone said somebody has got to take care of these sick folks. That there are people today that are that have food for every day because somebody along the way said, you know what, someone needs to feed the poor. Someone needs to feed the hungry. Someone needs to take care of those children. Someone needs to deal with education. And believe it or not, there are schools around the world that were founded by Christians because someone said education needs to come to these people and somebody needs to do something about it. And the Christians said, we'll do it. We'll do it. We'll step in and we'll do those things. And as a matter of fact, even though we don't always get this right, as a matter of fact, slavery was abolished in England because of Christians. Because of a man named William Wilberforce, who had become a Christian, and he began to look at the practice of the slave trade in his country, and he said, somebody has got to do something about this because it's wrong. Because all humans are created in the image of God, and all humans have dignity. Everybody you're ever eyeball to eyeball with is created in the image of God. And so today, now granted we know slavery goes on, we know that slavery happens in our world today, unfortunately, even though it's illegal, we know it goes on, but we are in better places today because there was a group of people, there was somebody that God stirred and said, this has got to change. Missionaries, you can go research missionaries who've died because someone needed to hear the message of Jesus. And as a matter of fact, in about the year 200, there were some people in captivity. There were these women in captivity, and they were in a Roman prison waiting to go to the arena to die because they followed Jesus, and they had not been baptized yet. And then a man who was a leader of this group of Christians decided that, you know what, these people have not been baptized yet, and I need to go into the prison, into the jail, and voluntarily put myself in harm's way so that these people who follow Jesus can be baptized before they meet their end in the arena. And Saturus, I believe is his name, if I'm pronouncing it right, goes into this jail and baptizes this group of followers of Jesus and voluntarily goes to the arena with these folks to show his solidarity with them. And there are just countless stories throughout history where there's a group of people who understand that Jesus has done something in the lives of people and the message needs to go forward. And there's always been a group of people who are handing the baton off to the next generation. I just briefly want to show you a picture of the next generation. Now these guys, I'm going to try and use this pointer on here if I can do this. Maybe we'll see what happens. I know it's on here. Oh, gotcha. Oh, I see. Maybe. We'll see. Oh, here we go. So this right here, this is a kid named Tommy Thompson. Now Tommy was in my Bible study in college. And the only reason Tommy came to my Bible study is because I knew his brother. His older brother and I had led a Bible study together. And as a matter of fact, his older brother, Zach, had invested in my life. And so I'd known Tommy since he was 14. And I think he agreed, once he got to college, to come to my Bible study just because his brother had introduced me to him. So I think he kind of came to my Bible study out of guilt in the beginning. Okay, I know Joe. I'm not so sure that he's all that cool. I'm not so sure that I want to hang out with Joe, but I guess I'm going to go to this Bible study. And in the beginning, I think we had maybe three guys. But Tommy was one of those people who was a gatherer, and he had all these buddies from high school. And so then what Tommy did is he then invited this guy, Jason, and then he invited this guy, Clint. And Jason and Clint started coming to my Bible study. And so now I got Tommy and I got Jason and I got Clint and I got a couple other guys. And we started just having Bible study, doing our thing and hanging out on Monday nights. And sometimes we'd watch football. Sometimes we'd have Bible study. You know, that's how it was. Sometimes we'd go play basketball. I'd say, hey, it's a basketball night. We need to go play basketball. But we just did these things. And then along the way, Then what happened is that Clint right here and Jason had these other buddies from high school, and there was Joe, and then there was Brian, they invited Joe and Brian whenever they came to college. Said, "Hey, we've got these other guys," and they were all these guys that they knew, and they continued to invite. And along the way, though, every year what we would do is we would have like a beginning kind of prayer at our first gathering. And we would walk to a place on campus where somebody had a class with somebody. And I would say, "Hey, is there somebody you have a class with that you're trying to reach out to that you would love to invite to Bible study, that you would love to invite to what's going on? And let's just mention their name and let's pray for them." And so we would walk around campus. We didn't look real weird, to be honest. I mean, we usually do it at night when everybody's gone, which is kind of weird. Anyhow, but we would go and we would pray. Well, Tommy had another guy, and this is Chris. And Chris was one of the guys that Tommy was praying for. And Tommy had this class with Chris, and he wanted to invite Chris to Bible study, and he wanted to know, you know what, is Chris, you know, where's Chris at? But I'm concerned about Chris. And then lo and behold, what do you think Tommy did? He invited Chris to Bible study. Now, I share this picture with you because every one of these guys in this picture, this guy here, that's Justin, and that is Clint's brother. But every guy in this picture, with the exception of the gray-haired guy, because he's a friend of mine, but every guy in this picture, every one of these young guys in this picture, came to ministry because of the one guy. Now, they all didn't come to my Bible study, but Tommy felt like that the gospel, the message of Jesus, needed to be passed on. That someone needed to hand the baton to somebody else. And so I really didn't have to do a whole lot. All I had to do was show up on campus and lead the Bible study. And Tommy just continued to gather all of these guys. But here's the thing, and here's why this is valuable for you, and this is why this is valuable for me. Because Tommy's brother Zach invested in my life, then I invested in Tommy's life, and then Tommy continued to invest. Now, the fun thing about this story, and one of my favorite things is this, is that I have been in the weddings of the majority of those guys in that picture. And for some reason, they think that I was the catalyst behind a number of things. And the other part of this is that as I've been in all those weddings, I have had parents come up to me and go, "Joe, man, I'm so thankful that you had that Bible study because my kid's life was changed because of what you guys did in that Bible study." But along the way, right, along the way, a group of people has always said, "Hey, the message needs to move on, that we need to share this message and share this story, and we need to invest in other people." Because a relationship with God may be personal, but it's not private. It's not something we keep to ourselves. Yeah, God does some personal things in our lives, but it's not private. We share those things. We go public. And even though there have been people along the way who've continued to share the message, guess what, church? Guess what? It's our turn to steward that message. And if we're going to reach people no one else is reaching, we need to do what no one else is doing and reach out to people who don't look like us. Reach out to people that maybe are a little bit messy. That means that we serve teens and we serve kids and we serve families and singles and the young and the old and the rich and the poor, because the message is for everybody, right? There's not a people group on the planet that the message is not for. And so it's your turn and it's my turn to be the steward of this great message of hope, because that's how the message got out of the first century. That's why you're here. That's why I'm here. And that's why we begin to do some things, and that's why we take risks for the sake of the gospel, because influence is a stewardship. And all of us have some influence. You have some influence. I have some influence. There's some people that are around you, that work around you, that you have some influence. If you're a parent, if you're a grandparent, you have influence. You invest in lives. And if we have influence, it's like something in our hands. It's something that we've got to decide what to do with it. God gives you and he gives me influence, and then we steward it. The church on the corner is a stewardship. It's an influence. And you and I are stewards of that. That in order to do what God has called you to do, in order to do what God has called me to do, you and I have to be a part of something where everybody is involved. Now, I love, friends, I love out on our marquee out there, out on the sign, that where it says ministers, it does not say my name, right? I love that. Because where it says ministers, what does it say? Anybody know? The whole church. All people, all members, that's what it says out there. And that is true, because if you and I are going to be amazing stewards of the message, right, that involves all of us. It's not a me thing, it's not a Joe thing, it's a we thing. And we have been called to this great thing. And do you remember the prayer of the first century church? What was that prayer? It was God, give us boldness. God, give us boldness. God, help us be bold. Put yourself on display in us. And the thing is this. Now, somebody maybe get a little squirmy, get a little nervous, but it's okay, right? But here's the thing, friends. I'm just going to say something that is amazingly offensive, and you're not going to like it, okay? And I'm just going to share it, okay? We can't afford, with this great message, with this great thing that God has called us to do, we can't afford for anybody to sit in a pew. We just can't afford that. There's too much work to do. And sitting in a pew, really, friends, sitting in a pew, again, this is offensive, and then we'll move on. But sitting in a pew is not church, right? I mean, we worship, we gather, we share communion, we do those things, but that's not church. Church is action. Church is movement. Church is not an institution. And church is about taking things to a whole different level because Jesus is the hope of the world. Jesus is the reason things change. And we believe the church is a movement. And let's be honest. Let's just be honest for a minute, right? And then I'm going to move on. But if Jesus and the church is not a big deal, isn't there something we could all be doing better, right? I mean, if Jesus isn't a big deal, if church isn't a big deal, isn't there a better way to spend Sunday morning? I mean, I could sleep in, you could sleep in, we could have a great breakfast, right? I mean, we could watch cartoons, I mean, whatever you want to do. But if Jesus isn't a big deal, if the church isn't a big deal, shouldn't we all go and do something else? Wouldn't it be more important to go do those things? Now, I don't believe that, because I believe the church is a big deal. I believe Jesus is a big deal. And I believe that we are stewards of something amazing. And so what I want to do is I want to give you kind of four things to do, right, as we move along here. So number one, I want to invite you to be bold with your invitations. Because here's the thing. When you and I are bold with inviting, when you and I are bold at sharing what God is doing in our lives, all of a sudden our faith grows. And I want to give you a great opportunity to do that. So October 22nd, I don't know if you've seen that in your bulletin, but on October 22nd, we're going to have worship in the park. And I'm going to give a shorter sermon, so no one has to listen really, really that long. It'll be awesome. But what a great time to celebrate what the church is doing. So here's the thing. Mark this on your calendar. You need to be thinking about this. But on October 22nd, who do you want to invite to worship in the park? Who are you going to invite to that thing? Because I think it's going to be amazing. Did you know, friends, you probably know this because you've been here longer than I have, that October is the birth month of this church. That in 1838, this church came about. And you and I are a part of that legacy of what God is doing in this community. And so I want to celebrate that on October 22nd. Second thing, be bold with your time. Now, time is one of those things. Now, pay attention to this, friends. Time is something you will never get back. You can always make more money, right? You can do that. You can get another job. You can get more jobs, however that goes. You can always make more money, but you can never make more time. And so time is valuable. And the thing I would ask you is I would ask you to invest it wisely. Invest it wisely. Give back. Make a difference in the lives of people. And I would invite you to invest in some way. Invest in others. And sometimes we are tempted, right, to sit on the sidelines and go, you know what? Somebody's already doing that. Somebody is already investing in that way. But whenever we are all investing, whenever we're all jumping in, that's when we are moving the message and the mission completely forward. And here's the thing. Did you know that there are kids and there are teens in this community who need people to invest in their lives? I've started doing the Tiger Friends at the elementary. And so here's the thing. If you're on Facebook, you know this already. So I've been going on Wednesdays, meeting with a kid. I saw Russ this week. And so here's the funny thing. This week, whenever I went in to meet with my Tiger friend, he said, Joe, I think you ought to come Mondays and Fridays as well as Wednesdays. And so what's that tell me? It tells me that I'm doing something worthwhile. And to be honest with you, I am really not that great with small children. That's why we have older children. But thanks. But here's the thing. I get more out of that than the kid does, right? But there are countless people, there are young people in this community that you and I can invest in. Third thing, be bold with your money. Now, here's the thing. Anytime a pastor talks about money, everybody thinks he's looking for a raise, right? So I don't need a raise. I think Sherry needs a raise, but I don't need a raise. But here's the thing. We don't need your money. What we need is we need money to invest in ministry. Because if we're going to do the best ministry that we can do, if we're going to do the most effective thing with ministry we can do, it requires more dollars. It requires giving. Now, I would encourage you this, if you're one of those folks, and I don't know, but if you're one of those folks who kind of periodically just drops a 20 in and you're like, all right, and then you just move on and you just don't think about it, I would encourage you to be a percentage giver and have a plan. And I can tell you, Tina and I are percentage givers, and we've taught our girls to be percentage givers. And so they know automatically, and Tina and I do this ourselves, is that 10% goes to the church. Immediately 10% of our income goes to the church. And then 10% goes to savings, and we live on the rest. And periodically, Tina and I support about three missionaries, something like that, maybe four, I don't know. But we give to missionaries as well because we want to invest well. Now, our girls, one of the things they learned whenever they started getting money was, we give 10% of what you get to the church, and you save 10%. So we're percentage givers. And so if you're not a percentage giver, here's what I would encourage you to do, and I'm not gonna follow up with this, but start somewhere. I mean, maybe it's 3%, maybe it's 5%, but start somewhere. Start in some place. Because when you and I are on a mission, we've got work to do. We've got things to do, and we don't have time to hang around, right? We don't have time to kind of be piddly, but invest. Okay, I'm going to move on from money before I get dirty looks, right? Be bold with your prayers, all right? Here's the last kind of piece of this. Number one, I would encourage you to pray that somebody would get the work of the church done. And what I mean by that is invest in the lives of people. Pray that someone would get the work done. Number two, pray that God would raise up people to reach other people. Number three, pray that God would make us great stewards of the next generation, because you and I are stewards of the next generation. Pray that kids wouldn't leave church after high school. We all know kids who've been at church for a time frame and then they rolled. And who knows whether they come back. To me, that is not a great track record. And I want my kids to love Jesus after they get out of high school. My life, friends, is almost over. I'm 48 years old. I'm almost 50. I am over halfway dead, right? Thank you. Sorry, Russ. But friends, I got work to do, right? We got work to do. We almost gone. I'm almost gone, okay? And God has placed us on the planet for a reason. God has placed us in this place for a reason. Now, what I want to do is, here's how I want to kind of wrap this up. I was going to share a passage of scripture, but Jim read it earlier, and so this is kind of a, hey, let's get to work sermon, okay? So you can go read about Paul in chapter 28 of Acts on your own, okay? So just go do that. Last year, I did a funeral for a woman who got it. And throughout the year, she had been in the hospital. Her name was Ruth Daywald, one of my heroes. And I went and visited her in the hospital. And while she was in the hospital, you know what we talked about? We did not talk about any regrets that she had in life, because she didn't have any regrets. What we talked about was the things she missed, because she had been a youth leader in the church. And so we talked about the camping trips that her and her husband used to take the youth on. We talked about the things that they did in their home. Her and her husband would do is they invited the kids over. They would do bonfires and cookouts and all these things. We talked about the Bible studies that she led in her home with these young people, and how she had invested in their lives and gone and done all kinds of things. And so whenever I got up to do her funeral, guess what? She was easy to talk about. The worst thing a pastor can ever do is get up and go, man, I don't think I have anything to say about this person. But with Ruth, I had so much to say that I had to kind of start editing down, because she had invested her life well. And at her funeral, guess what? People could give flowers, but if you wanted to give a monetary donation, guess where she wanted the money to go to? She wanted the money to go to the church. But not only did she want her money to go to the church, she had two specific areas. She wanted her money to go to the youth, because she had invested in the youth in that church. And number two, she wanted her money to go to invest in missionaries doing work in other countries. She wanted her money to go. And for me, at the end of my life, I want to be a Ruth Daywald. That's what I want to be. So friends, so as we come to communion today, as we come and share communion today, I want to invite you to say yes to Jesus, and to say yes with what God wants to do in your life next. So, with your little handout, begin to fill that out. We're going to jump into communion. But begin to fill that out, and there are areas of interest in here. And if you don't find your area of interest, write it down, but fill that out. There's a way you want to serve. Check the box, and I want you to drop that. I'm going to have the offering plate up here, but I want you to drop that in the plate as you come by. If you're somebody who's already serving in an area, here's what I would encourage you to do. That if there is somebody that you know, this person would be great at this, why don't you take your sheet and hand it to them and go, you would be great at this.